Every morning, find me moaning, 'cause of all the trouble I seen. Life's a losing gamble to me. Cares and woes have got me moaning. Every evening, find me moaning. I'm alone and crying the blues. I'm so tired of paying these dues. Everybody knows I'm moaning. Lord, I spend plenty of days and nights alone with my grief. But I pray, really and truly pray, somebody will come and bring me relief. Every morning, find me moaning, 'cause of all the trouble I seen. Life's a losing gamble to me. Everybody knows I'm moaning.
That's Minneapolis-born and Brooklyn-based vocalist, musician, and composer Jose James with his update on Art Blakey's classic, Moanin'. At 34, James is taking jazz in a new direction, contributing his generation's hip-hop instrumentation and vocal stylings to the revered, time-tested jazz forms laid down by the elders. This is from his 2008 album, which happens to be his debut album, titled The Dreamer, which earned him worldwide acclaim. You go, James. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, August the 14th, and some tough talk today about Black America's grand illusions about power and politics and progress. Let's start off with the context provided by the late Adam Clayton Powell Jr. speaking in 1968, a year after he was excluded, as they said, from Congress. At UCLA, he's addressing the students at UCLA.
See, when you look at the United States of America today, you must realize that the world is not judging the United States of America according to what happens on the quiet banks of the Potomac River down in Foggy Bottom at the State Building. The United States of America is being judged by one unknown, isolated black man or black woman who is senselessly beat to death on the streets of the United States. I'm not talking only about black Africa and brown Asia. I'm talking about white Europe. Wherever I've gone, I've had leaders all over the world say, "How can you," meaning the United States, "expect us to follow you into creating a free world when back in the United States you are clubbing black men and women to death and shooting them down? How can you expect us to do that?" Democracy today is a black yardstick. The yardstick by which the world is judging us, and I don't care what you read in the press or hear from the White House or the Department of State. The United States is being judged today by what they're doing to the black man and woman in America. What have they done?
Democracy is to be measured, he said, by a black yardstick. And we have been given yardsticks all the time. Over and over, America has had yardsticks, black yardsticks, by which to measure this thing, this noble concept we call democracy. And most recently, the yardstick was in the name of Eric Garner of Staten Island. And just this past week, the yardstick was an 18-year-old who should have started his college career this week. His name is Michael Brown. And residents of his town in Ferguson, Missouri, are in their sixth day of outrage over the police killing of Michael Brown. And when we hear the reports from the media, you would think that this is just an extraordinary development, as if it had never happened before, this wanton killing by police of black people. And we know the racial dynamic. The people who cause America to rethink things, just a 2 or 3 seconds long, and then they move on. It usually happens when somebody's in the street dead. And then theoretical discussions are held about what needs to be done to retrain cops and to reform things. But I suggest to you today in this discussion that I'm about to have with you that if anybody's paying attention, they would see that what has been brought into sharp focus once again is not just this dynamic of the oppressive forces that are apparently allowed to operate unchecked within black communities and Latino communities across this country, but that nobody seems to be taking inventory to really assess what the situation is. And these flare-ups after fatalities, just we've been through these cycles before as well. Things happen, there's a big flare-up, things subside, and life goes on. And we wait for the next one. And then we will have a discussion at that time about how consistent the pattern has been and how it has been going on for so long and how it has not yet been solved, as is the discussion now with regard to Ferguson. Everybody is saying in Ferguson, while the media, they're just awestruck, dumbstruck, in fact, how could this happen? And everybody knows that this was decades in the making. Decades. And it's so ironic that the news has been filled with reports, and I myself have covered it, about Gaza, occupied Gaza. And here we have Black America is Gaza. All black communities are Gaza, occupied by a terrorist organization. And with the power and capability of taking life whenever it chooses. And if it so chooses, can do so with the confidence that very little will result in the way of reform or justice. And I want to talk today about the irony of where we are today. The irony of it. If I could summarize it, I'd say the irony is that we have now a confluence of interests. It hadn't really been that grotesque before. It hadn't been so in your face before. But it did begin years ago, some years ago, where we see black leaders basically joining the forces of oppression. And whether by acts of omission or acts of commission, have decided that it is more advantageous for them to side with the enemy. Let's take a look at Ferguson, and let's take a look at Staten Island, where Eric Garner was killed by police chokehold. The marked absence, complete absence, of a black political response. It's mind-boggling. How could you, in a city of Ferguson that is predominantly black, and in a situation in the city of New York, Staten Island, where you have a large black population with a large contingent of black elected officials, how is it possible that these things can go on without loud and visible involvement of black elected leadership of any kind? They're booked for the hills. They're gone. In Congress, they're on vacation. They don't have the time. They're busy resting up, having themselves a grand old time. The empathy, the ethos, the sympathetic connection that black people used to have apparently no longer holds. They can't even get that from their elected leaders. You will notice that they're all alone in this fight. In Ferguson and in Staten Island, they're alone. Whatever leadership that has come their way, number one, is not elected, and number two, has also become predatory. The interest is in using the tragedies for personal gain, to elevate one's profile, to cash in on being the go-to person who can vacillate between the black and white worlds as the person who can be counted on to keep the lid on things. That's a predatory relationship. And you know, there's this new industry that has cropped up on the backs of the dead. Let's use the outrage of the community to see if we can make a lot of money on the other side. See if lawyers could make a nice payday out of death. And they're not above the circus of trotting out, grieving, hurting people who, having no leadership whatsoever, will take whatever comes, and who will place themselves in the hands of people with very, very suspect motives. And we are not hearing the language from these people that they are interested anymore in fights. They're not into fighting anymore. Their days of fighting are over. They are now in the business of cashing in. It used to be that people making these kinds of decisions would be so ashamed, and if not themselves ashamed, that they would be shamed by the community. I remarked not too long ago when the Congress voted unanimously, the Congressional Black Caucus, the only one exception, to vote for $225 million more on top of the 3.1 Israel had already received in military aid. $225 million more to just obliterate the Palestinians. It would have been a day, not too long ago, where people like John Lewis, the great pacifists, and even the liberals like Elizabeth Warren and others, they would have been upset at the idea that anybody would even think that they would cast such a vote. Let alone that they actually did it. But they're answering to different masters. They're answering to different interests. And so they can do these unconscionable things, these contradictory things, without even batting an eye. And they know full well there will be no retribution. There will be no accounting for this. Nobody would even care. So the communities have descended all together. And you know, we've been covering stories. And take a look. Just last week, we're talking about Detroit. In fact, this week, 100,000 households without running water in Detroit. And there isn't a hue and cry from Congress. And the senior most member of Congress, John Conyers, this is his district. And he's been in Congress since 1964. And his people, in 2014, do not have running water. And this does not constitute an emergency, a political emergency. Life just goes on. We see that schools are being shut down like crazy. New Orleans doesn't even have one public school left. It is all chartered up. It has not caused a clarion call to go out to say we are under massive and systemic assault as a group of people. We are sitting ducks, and they're aiming their guns and everything else that they have at the black community and firing at will, and there is nothing standing in the way. There is nothing that is letting up the pressure. There's nothing that is shielding the community from this massive, unrelenting assault on every single level. From the president on down, they're all part of the conspiracy, it seems. You talk about any aspect of life, and black people are taking it in the teeth under massive assault. You want to talk about unemployment? You want to talk about teenage unemployment in the 80 to 90%. You want to talk about health care and health status. You want to talk about longevity, even the longevity of blacks has gone down. The quality of life. You want to talk about housing. You want to talk about police brutality. All these aspects of life are at full tilt in the red zone for blacks, all in crisis mode. And we have these folks running around as if nothing really is happening, and they can casually engage in theoretical discussions. The obscenity in these two cases, because they now have the Reverend Al Sharpton in common, I'm talking about the Garner case and the Brown case, is that we are hearing about, well, we are calling for justice, and we're calling for transparency, and we're calling for, you know, an open process, and all this kind of nonsense that we would never, ever have tolerated from the status quo just a couple of years ago. We wouldn't put up with this kind of language, let alone from a black supposed leader who should have but one job in the face of these circumstances, and that is to insist, if you're going to take leadership, in as much as you're going to insert yourself to take leadership, then let's hear what a leader would say. But we're not hearing that. We're hearing the leader say, be calm, don't cause any violence. We need to sit down and talk. And all the language of capitulation and concession, and is, in other words, he's beyond activism. He's now into negotiation. And there are two dead black men on whose backs this nonsense is going on. We have these black elected officials able to, I mean, they were present and accounted for when the vote for Israel went down. Oh, yeah, absolutely. They had to show their allegiance to that community. But the communities that they represent, all of them, every single one of them, experiencing in one way or the other major crises in all these different categories. Oh, well, they can be theoretical about that. They could be theoretical about that. So you see where this leads in terms of the onus it places on the communities themselves. It means these communities are operating under a really weird sense of reality. Maybe they have disembodied themselves from the reality they actually are living. Or maybe the oppression is so intense that it has caused them to separate their consciousness from the reality of life. That they accept this and will not do what needs to be done to cause a dramatic and radical change. You've got to throw these people out, and you've got to throw the systems that they are loyal to. You also have to throw them out. How dare anybody come into your neighborhood at a time like this where people just have had it, because they have dealt with this matter for more than two decades. In other places, longer than that. And one It is acting, people are acting as if, well, this is just a terrible thing. And they immediately don't connect the dots. Connecting the dots is not allowed. Because you can easily extract the situation and say, well, this began on Wednesday and here we are on Friday. And so from Wednesday to Friday is the only historical context that is relevant. You don't need anything else. And we get the story told to us from the point of pathology. Here are black people, again, misbehaving, as they typically do, because they lack reasoning. They lack the ability to sit down and negotiate at the table. They lack the capacity to be reasonable and logical. So they resort to primitive behavior. And like bacteria, they must be contained. And so the nation is encouraged. The police are doing just what they have to do. Because look how these people are behaving. And we have the black leaders coming in saying that the primary thing right now is exactly what their oppressors want. I'm not suggesting in any way that violence is a good idea. I'm saying we have to understand its genesis. And more than that, we have to understand that the help that these communities, not only do they need, but they have invested in it. These people have voted for leaders. They have voted for democratic systems. They have participated in the democratic process that was supposed to give them a fair shake. And they are completely betrayed and abandoned. And in the absence of any credible leadership, any logical alternative, this is what happens. You will notice that although Sharpton got down there in Ferguson, he didn't stick around too long. He was down there just long enough to personally connect with the parents of Michael Brown, to hold a news conference so that they could be seen together, and of course to introduce the lawyer that they will now have, which is, of course, brought in by, who is, of course, brought in by him to handle the case. And the only focus, the primary focus is, what will the payout be? Because you know there's going to be a payout on the civil side. And that will happen without a trial of the police officer or officers involved. Same as in the Eric Garner case. The mentality is, this is going to be a big payout. And we can set aside for the minute the immediate matter here, which is this lynching of black men and women and young boys and young girls has got to stop. But the fight that needs to be mounted, they're not interested in that. They're not interested in taking on that responsibility. So he goes into Ferguson and he speaks like a statesman. You know, we have to sit down and talk things through. And he's now the epitome of good old-fashioned conservative responsibility. Actually telling black folks, you guys are out of order. You're misbehaving, and I don't approve of that. And now, of course, he is gone because he has other things to do. Black people need to wake up about the task that needs to be done. They have to rid themselves of every vestige, every badge of slavery. And one of the badges of slavery happens to be psychological. You yield to the illogical choice of supporting systems that oppress you. I don't get that. And you do it over and over and over again, expecting different results, expecting improvements in your quality of life. You've got to construct your own political apparatus, your own political systems, your own economic systems, your own community leadership. Grassroots activism has got to take hold in these communities to turn them around. Oh, I voted, and I vote all the time. Well, look what you're voting for. The black folks have not shown up to say, even just by their physical presence, we are in solidarity with you. We are concerned about you. Not even that. Not even that. There is no expression of a recognition that there is a bond here. There is a shared experience here. There's a shared history, a shared culture, and a shared circumstance of oppression. And that irrespective of their geographic boundaries, they are compelled to respond purely on the basis that their folks are in crisis. And this is one of the things that they never did understand about Adam Clayton Powell. Powell's congressional district geographically was in Harlem. And yet he was the congressman for all of Black America and white America too. There is no way that this situation could unfold in Ferguson and Powell would not have been on the scene first thing. And the call wouldn't be about let's sit down at a table and negotiate. The call would be, this is what we will accept and nothing less. This is how we define justice. Nothing less will do. You're going to call for a transparent investigation, which means you're capitulating already. You are indicating to everybody that your mission is not about advocacy. You're not there to represent the interests of the community. You're there to facilitate a transaction that favors the people doing the bad stuff. You are there as their shield. You are there to literally disempower a community. People have to get real. I mean, real, and take a look at what's happening. This happens to be, this form of oppression happens to be expressing itself in the form of police killings, and we have enough of those. We have hundreds of those in the last couple of years. We have them to show that this is an established pattern. This is not a hallucination by black people. This is happening. And it has happened often enough to constitute a crisis. And you add that to all the other crises that black folks are dealing with, and you see that you could come to only one conclusion. If you are a conscious black person, you are under unrelenting assault. That should be your only consciousness. Now, you want to make up a whole different reality. That requires you to, by necessity, betray the interests of your community. Because the realities have not changed. Not since the 60s. Not since the 50s. These realities have been constant since the days of slavery. They remain exactly the same. Maybe in varying degrees of intensity from time to time, but the objective conditions have not changed. The power equation in this country has not changed. Because all along we have leadership that consistently sells out, that consistently takes the aggregate interests and hopes and dreams and aspirations of their beleaguered communities and puts them all on the auction block, whoever is the highest bidder. And sometimes they're so warped, they're so damaged, they don't even need anybody to bid. They'll just give them. How can I serve you by betraying my community? An entirely different political attitude and a whole different political approach must be undertaken here. It is the only salvation for these communities. We have a mainstream press acting as if they can't even fathom how this could happen. The mainstream press was cited specifically by the Kerner Commission of the 1960s as being one of the most culpable agencies of creating and maintaining a racially bifurcated America by refusing to consistently cover the issues pertinent to these communities. In New York City, where Eric Garner was murdered by chokehold, all of the major media outlets have refused to do any further public affairs programming. Black folks don't know what's going on in their neighborhoods, and they've decided nobody ought to be interested. So there's no regular discussion. There's no regular connection people could make with their reality. So the media have done a great job of just wiping these communities out. They don't exist, except from time to time when it is unavoidable. And even so, the news today is about two white reporters and how they got roughed up. That's the news. The reporter from the Washington Post and the reporter from the Huffington Post, and everybody is all upset in the media because two white journalists covering the story got roughed up by the local cops. And they're still alive. They weren't beaten to a pulp. They're not lying dead in the street with their blood oozing out of their heads down the median. And now I come to the other side of it. The other side of it is, while this is going on the black side of things, something also is going on the white side of things, and that is complete indifference. This is a matter only of interest only for a couple of seconds, but there is no outcry from white, liberal, and progressive America. Their attitude is, this is not our business. This does not concern us. We're into climate change. We're into gay marriage. We're into different issues. We're into women's rights. We're into equal pay. We don't have time, nor do we have an interest in engaging in behalf of oppressed communities. That's not our calling. We're not concerned. And I've called them out before about the pretense that they are all about seeing a new day, working in a new way, watching and commenting and naturally, and it's a good thing, to sympathize with oppressed communities outside of the United States. Inside the United States, they can't find any. Their GPS just doesn't work. They can't find hurting communities to champion. Their politics does not allow them to go into these communities with a genuine sense of concern. Their politics does not allow them to actually forge working, productive relationships and to help build grassroots movements and to actually help build democracy. That's not their concern. So it means that the Black community is all alone. And it better get used to that idea. It's got to fend for self. And that's okay. If, in fact, you come to that conclusion, which is the correct conclusion, you don't have the time to futz around with people who don't matter. You don't have the time to invest in things that are not of your concern. You don't have the time to lend to anybody else's movements. You are to be ruthless and obsessive about your interests, period. You don't have the time to engage in these games. But it is important for you to recognize that you're alone and you're unprotected at practically every level. You're under unrelenting assault. That is the reality. There is nothing, practically nothing, standing between you and it. So if you want to continue taking this casually, if you want to continue ignoring this political reality, if you want to indulge in this hallucination that somehow you have come along a long way, you have made such great progress that you can actually look at those Black people as being different from you because you have moved on. You have climbed the ladder. You are better off. You don't have time with the riffraff and the expendable people. You have better things to do. But if you do come to the conclusion that your life is on the line, your future is at stake, the situation is far from normal, it is even beyond crisis, it is in meltdown. The quality of life for African Americans at practically any level, if it were to be measured on some kind of a misery index, it would be in meltdown mode. Everything is falling apart. And when we see not only these things that are happening, we see the horrible response. In fact, no response, which is now coming from your Black leadership. They're telling you don't matter either. What, therefore, is your response? Get them out. Throw them out. Throw their party out. throw anything associated with them out. And don't even blink about it. Construct your own political systems. Construct your own systems that speak to your own interests. You have no friends. You have no colleagues in the battle for your survival. I point again to the progressive community and the startling silence, not only about these two most recent cases, but all of the indicators, all of the milestones along this highway of misery. The refusal, the absolute refusal to even articulate a concern about it, to articulate that these things are part of your political consciousness and philosophy, which will give you the right to claim that you are liberal or you're progressive. People are being shot down in the street. People are being killed by cops. And there is nothing said from the Green Party or any liberal party or any other independent party. Nothing, nothing. So you cancel your credentials out, and that's okay. All I'm saying is do a forensic audit. That's what the black community has to do, a forensic audit, and that would show you who's with you and who's not with you. And you have to be prepared, white or black, to cut them loose. Take them out of your misery. And begin the process of reconstruction to salvage yourself, to salvage your community, to salvage your future. Because it is all in jeopardy right now. There are people who believe that they are beyond being affected, that they are immune. But we see even in the White House, the president is treated like a slave. No president has been treated the way this president has been treated. Nor given permission to do so. So the assault is from top to bottom. The black community, in the face of these most recent events, cannot afford to indulge in hallucinations anymore. It cannot afford to deny what the reality is. It cannot afford to put off the fight either. You got to get real. You have to get real. This is happening. It is happening with impunity. All those people whose consciousness and consciences could allow them to identify with oppressed people all over the world and can't see it in Staten Island and can't see it in Ferguson, Missouri. Then these people don't really need to be in your life. These people, they're not important to you. There are a hazard to your health. You keep moving, but you must keep moving. And that is my message to today, to everybody. Part of the responsibility of political work is that you have to be real about the conditions in which you have to work. You're not slighting anybody, you're not out there to do anybody in, But you are there to take care of business. And if the record shows a consistent pattern, then the consistent pattern must become part of your consciousness. It then becomes a scientific fact. If you have been ignored for 20 or 30 or 40 or 60 or 238 years, then that is a scientific fact. To now believe that somehow something, some kind of miracle dust will come out of the sky and change things and change people's attitudes and change outcomes, then you are mentally unstable. You are functioning in la-la land. Mature political activity requires you to do what you need to do to take care of your business, your interests, your community. Because everybody does that. They identify their issues and they organize according to their issues and their interests. They don't care whether you object. They don't care what your opinions are. They don't care if you identify or don't identify. They just keep moving. These are their interests. Similarly, the African American community has got to do it. If for no other reason than it will be the basis on which they can now negotiate with the power structure on a somewhat equal plane. But when everything is against you because you're powerless, you have no resources, you are abandoned, you have no representation, you're like fish in a barrel. You are prey. And as long as you are prey, there would be predators. And the time has come to break that cycle, is what I'm saying. So, yes, the people have already shown their hands as to what their disposition and interests are with respect to the outcomes of these cases. They already are fixed on a particular outcome of these cases, and it's largely about a payout. They're not acting or doing anything that suggests that they are getting ready for one hell of a legal battle to win against oppression in a way that would set the course somewhat straight for the future. Because if you follow their logic, it is just a matter of time before the next tragedy exactly like this will happen. And they'll show up again. And there'll be news conferences with grieving family members. And they will trot them around to the media to talk about things which have, frankly, they have great emotional appeal, but they have nothing to do with where the fight really is. But these folks don't intend to take on that fight. They only intend to act like they want to take on the fight. But they actually will make a heck of a lot more money and gain a heck of a lot more personally if they just act like it. And so the political job here will never get done because that is not their interests. They already have signed the contract with whoever it is that they're reporting to. And they will not betray that contract whatsoever. They will not deny themselves the bread. So, forensic auditing is the task I charge the community with. Really go down the list of the bill of particulars and see where you stand. And tell me whether you can actually conclude that you're comfortable with juxtaposing your reality with what it is that is standing there as your leadership. Tell me that you're comfortable with that. And if you don't get it by now that the situation is almost, not quite, but it's getting there, it's almost at the point of being irretrievable. It is so overwhelmingly one-sided, it is practically irretrievable now. But there is a chance to reverse this. It requires people doing some very, very serious political work and being very committed to it. And that is the task. We'll know that you're doing it when you dump these folks, when you abandon, make it a point to dump the Democratic Party. We'll know that you're doing it when you form your own political structures and you begin grassroots political building and institutional building. We'll know that you're doing your work when your communities are rebounding at critical levels in education, healthcare, housing, employment. We'll know these things are being done. When your will actually is as good as done because you could compel it to be so, we'll know that you've done your work. Until then, as the great philosopher James Brown would say, we're talking loud and saying nothing. I want to thank you for joining me today. I hope this caused some kind of a consideration on your part that you will need to do some forensic auditing of your political reality and encourage others to do so, because it's a critical time and it's got to be done. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Occupied Territory America with Mike Fader. Let me know what you're thinking. Send me a note to leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. I know this was a little harsh today, but sometimes we got to come at life in, you know, directly. No, there's no indirect way to do it. You got to call it as you see it, and that's been my tradition. So I thank you for the pleasure and the privilege of your company, but I really wish that you would pass this message along and begin in your own ways. If you have two or three or four people that you could work with to begin the process of hunkering down and doing something, because we are beyond crisis, and making sure that when people betray you, this is supposed to be remedied by getting rid of them. Get them out of office. Get them out, and get out of any political system that also betrays you. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company.
'Cause of all the trouble I've seen, life's a losing gamble to me. Cares and woes have got me moaning. Thank you.